Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about Episode 7 as we get into another swap, also spelled with an O, always in Survivor South Africa, and so much to talk about in this episode. So let me bring in my amazing co-host, who I'm calling the Superman to my Aquaman, I guess. Now we're going in the whole superhero direction. I don't really feel like that tracks. But anyway, please welcome Mike Bloom.
So now we moved away from actual one-to-one comparisons to contestants on this season and just to fictional characters now. I can't wait until we compare ourselves to, like, historical leaders by the time the podcast finishes this season.
Hey, whatever the theme of the episode is. Look, Jacques and Ting Ting, I feel like that was really good. Then we went to Sipe and Tanya. Now we're in the superhero dimension. It keeps getting less and less realistic if you even feel like it started that way, but I'm into it.
I mean, I can't wait until the end when it's like, you are the concept of time and I am the idea of the universe working in a way that, you know, the stars align for you in each and every way, unlike the stars aligning for poor Rocco this week.
Yeah, classic Shannon and Mike, time and universe. But you may notice, listeners, that it is just Mike that I have on the line. I did announce last week / on Twitter and Facebook that we would be having the great P Chaos with us this week, and so unfortunately there were some major technical difficulties happening in South Africa for him, so we aren't able to get him on this week, like classic Chaos, even though this was completely not his fault in any way. So very unfortunate. We're really upset about that because we love talking to PK, obviously amazing character, amazing, you know, player to talk to, but we can't do that this week. We're going to try really, really, really hard to almost definitely get him on later in the season. And I will say that we have such a good lineup of guests coming up, like genuinely, like as a Survivor fan and an international Survivor fan, it really is fire. So we're going to have very few opportunities, I think, just to chat like this, you know, between the two of us, Mike. So Yeah. We'll get into it and have fun with that. And we'll get PK on later and it's all going to be good.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if you should say fire. It seems to be a touchy subject around Survivor or South Africa Island of Secrets. But yeah, I think that, you know, maybe to settle these technical differences, maybe what South Africans should do is pile up all their electrical cords in a corner so that they know that where it is at all times, so nobody loses it. Nobody tries to hide the cords because they call the other people gypsies that like to hang on to electrical cables because that's their thing. That might be the easiest way to cover their tracks.
Yes, if only we had known that earlier. But yeah, very upset about PK, but we're still going to have fun on this podcast. And Mike, there was so much interesting dynamics happening. I feel like I say that every week, but we're getting so much, whether it's Island of Secrets, with, you know, from all of the tribes, and we'll talk about the edit a bit later, but the vote almost always feels like one component of that whole overall puzzle and you know, within the whole puzzle of the season itself. So I feel like there was so many dynamics here again, especially with the swap, just shaking things up in a really perfect way.
Yeah, this was a really interesting perspective from a gameplay view, because there were some people who got a little bit hidden during what Jacques would call chapter two of the pre-merge. It was really nice this episode to see essentially all the Lao Mei people that hadn't gone to a tribal council yet, much to Sipe's chagrin, chagrin or whatever, where, you know, you see a lot of Mike, Letitia, Jeff, Maba across the board. We see new dynamics. We got to find out a little bit more about what happened at Saula 2.0. So we got a lot of blanks filled in while simultaneously setting up some very interesting choices as to how the paradigm of the season is going to shift. I mean, do you mind if at the top we talk about the edit of this episode? Because I know that there's been a lot of chatter amongst the Survivor internet populace this week, both on Twitter and our question thread and in Reddit as well, about the fact that some people feel like, you know, this is the fourth episode in a row where it feels like the boot's relatively straightforward from when, you know, we get back from the immunity challenge and they say, okay, person X is going home. And I would say maybe with the exception of Tanya, yeah, that sort of has been the case from Rose Lee moving forward. But I would love to hear from you if you have a problem with that, because this might be a hot take from my perspective, but I don't necessarily have the biggest problem with it personally.
Yeah, I feel like it's what you're trying to get out of Survivor. You know, when I compare it to something like Edge of Extinction, which is kind of the personification of modern US Survivor at its most extreme, they're almost polar opposite edits. You know, Edge of Extinction, I feel like, was really based around the vote. But then next vote, you know, the next episode, that vote was completely meaningless a lot of the time, where it was like, you know, we were shocked, but we were also confused. We didn't understand the dynamic. So, of course, it was surprising, because when you don't know what's going on, you're going to be surprised. And I feel like South Africa luxuriates in the extra time that it has, and it kind of, it's very genuine, as we said. It gives you a lot of information. I guess people are saying too much information, because I feel like we genuinely know what is happening step by step, and if this really obvious vote is happening and everyone's on the same page, we're kind of aware of that. For me, as a viewer, I really enjoy getting to spend time with these contestants and getting to kind of see the various dynamics and see it, you know, work into that larger puzzle that I was talking about, not just, you know, of the episode where all of these pieces are equally weighted, even the tribes that don't go to tribal council, but also of the entire season. And as a podcaster, I really enjoy it because I feel like we have really relevant, realistic information to talk about. Whereas I feel like if I was talking about Edge of Extinction, I might be a little lost. I might be doing a bit of guesswork, trying to work out what everyone's motivations are. But I feel so connected to these characters and the dynamics and the relationships and what their motivations are that I feel like I can reasonably talk about the decisions that they're making.
Yeah, so I can understand where people are coming from. I think starting out the season with two votes that were, you know, pretty much decided at tribal council, and then followed up by a plan that was supposed to work, but Jacques ends up, you know, misreading the situation and sending his closest ally home, is a strong way to start things off vote-wise. And then from then on out, we have four boots that you could relatively see coming, though, again, I'll argue that they did set up some stuff, some typical Survivor stuff with, you know, Tanya giving her pitch after the big open forum. And it did seem like maybe it was a little up in the air as to whether Tanya or Jacques would go home last episode. But I'm in agreement with you. Personally, I would rather care about the people in a season than care about a surprise at tribal council. And I think one of the advantages of, to your point, having everyone sort of show their cards edit-wise going into tribal council is that we really get a good sense as to why each person votes the way they do. You know, like, for example, leading up to this vote, we see Rob's perspective. We see Mike's perspective. We see Kubis's perspective. Probably the only person's perspective we didn't see was Letitia's, but I can imagine it was just her sort of thanking her lucky stars that she didn't get taken out because of an injury. So I think that we do get a lot of information filled in, which, as you said, is great for podcasters. Does it lead to, you know, the biggest hashtag blindside moments? I do. I'm always good for variants. So I know you talked about this on social media. I would not like to see a bunch of these in a row. I think four is a good amount to sort of do this string of, you know, conventional storytelling. Hopefully coming up, and it seems like maybe coming up next week, we'll get some change ups and maybe some votes that are really up in the air again once people start, quote unquote, playing the game. But for now, I think it's just doing a great job of letting us get to know these people and know the way that they're voting and where the way they're thinking, so that when they do end up going or making big moves down the line, we get some information about them, as opposed to maybe a couple of the recent U.S. seasons where we did not know them from Adam and we didn't necessarily know why they were voting the way that they did.
Yeah, when there's a big move and a big blindside, it's going to feel very, very earned, because now we know we can trust the edit that that's genuine. And I feel like US Survivor feels like if it's not a blindside or a big shock at the end of the episode, then it's a bad episode. I think that they're scared to give us, you know, a traditional vote that might be more down the middle. But I think that this, I wouldn't call any of these last few episodes bad episodes, and you're just taking the temperature of the online community. I feel like everyone's really enjoying the season. I've really enjoyed all those episodes. And the vote for me is a part of it. It's definitely an important part. Someone goes home, there's strategic decisions there, but there's also strategic decisions in the Island of Secrets or on the tribes that don't go to tribal council. Like, there's so much there, and I feel like the vote is not as paramount as it's been in US Survivor, but it's still maybe even more important to the overall strategy. I mean, Edge of Extinction is kind of a weird case because none of the votes end up mattering at all, but I do feel like it was a shocking moment, and I'm caught up on Edge of Extinction just because it's the most recent, but it did feel like shocking moment leading to, but what was the weight or the relevance of that, you know, long term, where I feel like all of these decisions we're going to talk about, as you said, Rob's decision, Mike's decision, on and on it goes, they're going to have long term ramifications that we will be able to track throughout the season. As someone who loves to analyze the game, you know, even beyond podcasting, as someone who loves to break down the game, have these discussions about the game, I feel like I have that material to do so, and that's the way I enjoy consuming the show. Not going to say no to a blindside. Yes. Like, I'll enjoy the shocking boot when it happens, but I've really enjoyed what we've been given for these episodes.
As American Rob would say, all sizzle, no steak, maybe, is Edge of Extinction. We're getting a lot of meat here in this episode, even though we got rid of one of the meatiest guys on the season, unfortunately, to Bryce's chagrin.
Yeah, and there's, you know, we can talk about it from everyone's perspective, and I feel like that it has been true for a lot of international Survivor. You know, we get so much more time. We have the extra 10 or so minutes in the episode, you know, through the season as well, and I just feel like we get to understand things. You know, if you're there, maybe watching it, like, with your popcorn, not thinking about it until the next week, maybe you want to be shocked. For me, I love to analyze it. I really like what we've been given. And what we were given this episode was, I feel like, a really satisfying swap. You know, sometimes, you know, to go back to Edge of Extinction, the swap doesn't really shake things up, but we have so many different permutations across the two swap tribes here. And for me, looking at the two new dynamics of either tribe was built upon one 10-second conversation that we saw between, you know, the usual brew down between Nathan and Rob, when Nathan says to Rob to talk to Kubus and Mike, which at the time seemed crazy, but actually had a lot more weight to it, which I want to talk about as well. And Rob tells Nathan to take out Dante. And I feel like both tribe dynamics are completely built on this conversation.
I love how much this relationship has held strategic water and storytelling water over the course of this entire season. Who would have thought that in the first episode, when we saw one guy carry the other on his back into the first tribal council, that they would then have all of these sidebar conversations throughout challenges that pretty much determine the decisions they would at least try to make in chapter two and are making in chapter three. It's crazy. Again, like I mentioned before, it was interesting to hear Nathan's perspectives, specifically for him to link up with Mike and Kubus, because from what we saw last week, I thought Kubus hated Nathan. I don't know if the jury's necessarily still out on that opinion, but it does seem at least that he was willing to listen to Rob in this episode. I just thought it was so interesting where, so we see them celebrate after the reward challenge. Were they all mingling, or was it just Nathan who walks over to Rob and gives him a message and walks back? Because if it's the latter, that's pretty sketchy. I know that people are still pretty much assuming that the Saula people are all working together to the point where that's where Rocco is really going to try to target, place a target on Rob as soon as they get into their new tribes. But I mean, it's pretty conspicuous what they were trying to do there.
I mean, it's incredible to me that Saula aren't being targeted for that reason. I mean, obviously, Rob and Nicole weren't in a great spot in their former tribe. They've swapped out of that. And now I feel like Saula holds all of the cards on both tribes. They haven't lost a member since they went to tribal in episode two. They've only gained idols and allies. And they're in such a good spot. Like, last week we talked about kind of this war and this battle and these two opposing sides. I now kind of feel like it's not two opposing sides. It's a center of a circle, and that is Saula, and then they've got connections now to the Laomei 3, to the Band of Misfits, and then like a couple of opposing members, you know, maybe Meryl, Dante, and I guess Letitia, who are all in the worst spots on their tribe and could be gone before the merge. So for me, their connections, Saula, don't have any connections to each other. They hold all the cards. Like, I'm kind of in awe of the way that they're running the game. You know, they're like the tribe epitomization of like Verna, where they're just like completely running the game, but between, you know, all five of them. And I have to say that I feel like I need to apologize to Nathan, because we got a lot of information in this episode that I feel like we didn't have before, and that makes some things clearer. I still don't feel like he should have been wanting to go to Rocks. I still don't love throwing the challenge, but things like giving the idol to Nicole and maybe even throwing the challenge seem a lot better now, knowing he was so tight with Maba, Mike, and Jeff, who now make a new relationship with him and Nicole in the swap tribe. Mike, you know, feels so good with Rob because of his relationship to Nathan. I'm like, he had some social inroads that we didn't know anything about, and he was in a way better position than any of us knew about. And I feel like that makes more sense with his moves, which, while being crazy, was better than we thought.
Yeah, there was a method to his madness. I thought it was so interesting. There was a secret scene this week before they swap where Steffi was talking to Kubus, where Steffi admits, and Steffi is a really interesting cog in this. I do agree that I think we've sort of shifted from a war metaphor to a wheel metaphor, where the amigos are sort of the center of the wheel, and now they have a bunch of different spokes. Though I think Steffi might be the Daenerys Targaryen to break the wheel, as we're going to talk about later on. But Steffi says, like, I feel like I'm on the outs, I'm not socially in. And Kubus, for what it's worth, again, he might have been talking out of his butt, but he said, if we go to tribal council, I'm voting for Maba. So Nathan's cockamamie plan to have a 3-3 tie could have possibly happened. Again, we don't necessarily know, considering that Kubus was also pissed off at Nathan in that moment. Maybe it wouldn't have played out. I mean, I think it's definitely indicative of the fact that everybody was obsessed with Nathan's hair this episode. This was a big episode. I almost gave my chizzy points to the Hair of Nathan Survivor SA Twitter account, because we saw Jeff We saw Jeff braiding it. We saw Nicole washing it by the well. I don't know why people feel like they need to play hairdresser with this man. Maybe they feel like if they do, that's going to distract him from, you know, stumbling into something and injuring himself once again.
Yeah, it's true. There's a lot of focus on Nathan's hair and, you know, Nathan's various injuries and body parts, which we'll get to as well. But I just feel like Nathan's playing a better game than I realized. I've, you know, not been happy with all the jizzy points that he's been getting, but it's actually been better than I thought. And I feel like for all the talk of genuine edits, the one thing I feel like I don't have extreme clarity on is what would have happened in that Senula tribe if they went to tribal council, because Nathan was in really, really good with those three Laomei members. And I think that as well speaks to a lot of the decisions in this episode, even going on to the other tribe. So now Mike is with Rob, and I want to talk about those two players particularly, because I feel like in this episode there were two key decisions which we can break down. There was kind of Rob versus Rocco, and I feel like we can put a lot of that decision on Mike and then to a lesser extent Corbis. And then there's also Rocco versus Letitia, or a weaker member, and I feel like Rob is heading that up. So what decisions should we drill down on first?
Let's start with Rob's ultimate decision here, because it really did seem like, you know, I agree that it wasn't just his decision. There were a lot of moving parts here when it came to Ta'alo, considering it was a unanimous vote. But considering that Rob seemed to be the mouthpiece of this decision, to the point where he was pretty much, again, the theme of Rob overtly doing things in front of everybody else, him basically hinting, pointing to Rocco behind his hand of vote this guy out at tribal council. I think it makes a lot of sense to start with him here.
Yeah, so Rob's move, he takes out the only other person on the show who has as many muscles as him, which is a big call because there's a lot of muscles on the season. But I've seen online that people really hate this move, that he took out a strong player, that he took out a shield. And I really like this move from Rob, and I'm kind of surprised it's such a hot take. You know, we got so many questions like, how bad was this move for Rob? He's lost his shield. And like, for me, I think it's a good move. Like, what do you think about that, Mike?
I mean, I'm going to agree with the conventional opinion here, but I'm going to defer to you because I'm very intrigued to hear your thoughts about the logic behind Rob's decision here.
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess the conventional wisdom, and I guess your wisdom, is that he's a shield. Don't take out a shield when you're the strongest guy. And I don't love the messaging from Rob. I don't like that there was a lot of talk about let's get rid of strength when he's obviously so strong. I feel like that speaks to like the Cerie Fields school of thinking, but the opposite, where she wouldn't be like, get rid of this person because they're weak. If you're weak as well, you know, don't do that. But I feel like it was hard to give other messaging because it should be, well, he's on the other side, but he has connections to Corbis through Meryl and Dante. He's on OG Laomei. So whichever way you spin it, you can't really bring it to someone like Mike and Corbis from a, you know, strategy or a relationship perspective. So you have to just point to the fact that he's a huge threat. And for me, what kind of shield is Rocco for Rob? He's a terrible shield. I don't want a shield that's shooting at me. That's a defective shield. That's like the call is coming from inside the house. I mean, Rocco voted for Rob in this episode, but beyond this episode, he wasn't working with him on the former tribe where Nicole and Rob were at the bottom. What is the point of keeping around a strong shield who wants to get rid of you and who you're not working with? You know, people say, well, he's not going to win all the challenges to the end, so you don't need to worry about him. He doesn't need to win all the challenges to the end, but he needs to win enough challenges to buy himself time, to buy himself power, to buy himself the ability to kind of act freely, knowing that he's immune. And he has allies on the other side. He could find an idol. And if he's coming for you, that becomes a very real threat. And I think that if Rob keeps him around, they're diametrically opposed. They're not going to be working together. And he's kept around someone who is very powerful, who's not working for him, who he's like trying to keep as a prisoner to be his shield against his will. There is no working relationship there. Whereas the other path that he took was, I think, by taking out Rocco, he's completely emboldened the Amigos. They're in so much power on both tribes. He has loyal allies who have insulated him. He has an idol. He has other better avenues. And he doesn't need to be clinging to the thing of keeping one guy around who's probably going to win immunity anyway. And then you're going home. Like, the shield strategy for him of one guy is not his path to the end. The Amigos are.
What's the difference, though, between making this move now and then getting rid of Letitia, throwing the challenge next time and getting rid of Rocco then?
But why?
You know, I because I think the first point that you brought up is the stopping point for me. I think, again, if we're talking about content versus intent, like we did at the beginning of this season, and we're definitely going to get into that with Cipe as well, because I do not think this was a great episode for her either. I think that him putting forward this mentality of like, yeah, I agree, we got to get rid of these strong guys because they're just going to run the game at the merge. Dude, you're pointing a finger at somebody else and four are pointing back at you. You know, you're essentially building yourself up as a bigger target, knowing that you're already there. There's already stuff building against you at the moment that it's not necessarily helping your case. Yes, he's very well insulated. But if people are buying into your logic, shouldn't they then say, OK, by that logic, yeah, I would want to target you as well. I do agree that I think he wasn't necessarily a shield for Rob, maybe just from the surface of people are saying right at the merge, oh, you got to get rid of Rocco because he'll win a bunch of individual challenges, which I sort of dispute that notion. We can definitely talk about this idea of Rocco being a challenge threat considering the state of individual challenges nowadays on Survivor. It doesn't matter because Rocco was always going to vote against him. I just feel like the rallying logic was not necessarily sound considering it's something that they could very easily use against him. I think what he could have easily done is say, all right, we got to get rid of Letitia. We're sorry, girl. We love you, but you're injured and we want to keep winning challenges. I think that's a way to still keep the numbers, still create this unified atmosphere that he wants while at the same time taking out a former Laomei, taking out Rocco's right-hand person, and, you know, still, I think, creating that unifying message and still bringing together those connections. I don't necessarily know if Rocco needs to be the decision right now.
Well, people are saying he should have kept Rocco as a more long-term shield, you know, through the merge and stuff. And it's like, in what world is that going to happen? You know, as you're saying, that you're saying, okay, well, get rid of Letitia now, then throw the challenge, and then get rid of Rocco later. That's only buying him, you know, a couple of days. I do think, who knows what will happen? What if you merge? What if you swap again? Like, what if you don't lose that challenge, even if you try to throw it? We've seen that already this season. You have the shot, take it. If you're going to take out Letitia, you've now pissed off your shield, quote unquote, even more so. He'll be even more gunning for you. Like, that is actually a powerful enemy to have, just by the fact that he could be immune. When people are immune, they can do whatever they want. Like, I wouldn't want to be going up against that. And I feel like he thought, this is a bigger target for me right now. The Letitia move is the weaker move. It's the softer move. I feel like finish the job, take out Rocco. You can take out Letitia next time, and it's probably going to be much of a muchness where you have one of, you know, them both gone within the next two episodes. I just don't think it's as bad a move as people are saying, because, yeah, I don't want a shield taking swipes at me. That's a terrible shield. That's like the opposite of a shield.
It's a spiky shield. Yeah. It's one that harms you while simultaneously protecting yourself. I'm also very concerned as to, and Nico alluded to this in his final words to them, you know, what seismic impact is this going to take with the rest of the group as well? Because I guess they have to wonder as well, not only What is this decision going to inform for our own tribe? How is this going to inform what the other group thinks as well? And even though he has sort of given his marching orders to Nathan, I wonder how he thinks this is going to impact the other tribe as well. Do you think he has any thoughts as to whether or not that's going to, you know, have waves over there?
By the way that people have been acting, I would think that he would only make people happy. I mean, Mike couldn't have been keener to get rid of Rocco. You would think Jeff and Maba feel the same way. There's this huge group that Maba kind of vocalized, which is, I guess, original Saula and original Laomei, and I guess Jacques has kind of wormed his way in there. It's a weird group to me, because I'm like, that's almost every single person. Like, that's too big a group. That's why I feel like this has not been a good spot for the original Laomeis, who are in one side against a very, very small army, and then Saula will turn against you, and then you'll be the minority. So I feel like, you know, if he's working to be with that huge majority, which is great for Saula, I think it's a great message to send to everyone.
Do you think Rocco could have done anything? I know we asked this last week with Tanya, but considering how much Rob was looking to gun for him from pretty much them smearing paint all over themselves, do you think that there was anything he could have feasibly done to either turn things against Rob or against somebody else?
I think there needed to be greater urgency on the pressing threat of Steffi coming back into the tribe, and that very specific numbers threat. I think Rocco's issue, and I don't want to blame him too much, was he can't really see the actual tribe dynamics, which we can see from our couch with this genuine edit that we keep talking about. I feel like maybe the way that he was talking and who he was talking to showed how off base he was. I mean, he was talking to Sipe and Jacques, but especially Sipe, about this whole side and, you know, against Rob and giving her information from Saula, which is the tribe that she was on, and, you know, saying to her even that they think you're with them, which she obviously is. So I feel like he didn't realize that there was a real argument to be made here, which is that Steffi will come back into the tribe, and then Steffi, Jacques, Sipe, and Rob will have so much control over that tribe. I feel like maybe if he could have realized that that was the shape of things, he could have maybe gone to Kubas and Mike and said, look, Mike especially, if we have not been working together, let's work together because we only have tonight. And then Steffi's coming in and then none of us will have any power. The four of us can take control of this tribe to take out someone like a Rob, who seems like a really obvious threat and who there's, again, some wariness because of his idol and who knows what's happening with that. But if he were to go to them and say that, I feel like that's the perfect argument. And it's a true argument. I mean, we'll talk about Mike's move, but I think that is better for Mike and for Corvus. So I feel like Steffi was not even really mentioned when we were hearing about the conversations pre-tribal. And that's crazy to me, because her coming in for whoever goes out shapes the numbers so, so, so much. And it means Rob now has like total control of this tribe.
Especially because Rocco laid out, oh, Steffi is a number in their wheelhouse. For him to not make that argument is super interesting. I think, you know, maybe if he was a bit more studied of Survivor, you know, if he remembered back to Survivor Co. Wrong, when pretty much the reason why they got rid of Anna Kate was because they knew that Julia was coming in and they didn't want their alliance to necessarily have the numbers. I mean, I think this just stems back to Rocco's general issue with the game. We saw this in Laomei 1.0, which is, I think he assumes that what he sees is what everyone else sees. You know, that's why he brought the guys together, because he's like, yeah, of course guys would want to work together without necessarily really knowing each other, because that's just sort of the way that we do things. He says here, like, yeah, Rob is the bully. We need to take out the bully and his friends. We need to stage a revolt here, which is very interesting, considering that I think Rocco would probably be the one typecast more as a bully in popular culture, not necessarily by personality. I would just say by looks alone. He looks like a member of Cobra Kai as compared to, you know, everybody else on the Ta'alo tribe. But he doesn't necessarily see that other people see a different perspective. I mean, I could see why he was like totally fist bumping with Mike, because let's remember, Laomei didn't have any votes to test those bonds. He still thought there was this bond between him and Darrow and Mike and Jeff. He didn't necessarily know that Mike was, you know, strayed away from him and it was looking at Rocco, you know, with a gleam in his eyes for the past 3 weeks in the game, looking to finally get rid of him. So I think that had he just known more, I think there was definitely an argument to make. I mean, he could have made the argument also to, I know he would not want to flatline his own grandmother, but to throw Letitia under the bus there. But again, by saying like, look at what happened to her. We want to keep winning challenges. We all want to make the merge, right? It's so close. I don't know if we can do that with Letitia sort of hobbling behind us. But I don't know if that's something that Rocco would do. So I think there were paths for him to take. But I think he was unfortunately looking down one path that he didn't notice the couple of side paths that were opening around him.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they were definitely inroads with Corvus. He had been working with Meryl and Dante, who are Corvus's allies. So I feel like that could have worked. And also, it was kind of like a nice throwback to see them talking about what happened on Island of Secrets episode 1. And you were like, oh yeah, these guys have met and they know each other. So I feel like there could have been a connection there. But I want to talk about Mike and Mike's decision here, because I feel like a lot of it, for me, because I feel like Corvus could have gone for Rocco, I'm kind of putting Mike in this like swing vote position between Sipe, Jacques, and Rob, and then I guess Letitia and Rocco, and Corvus is somewhere in the middle of that. I do also want to say, like, a lot of credit for me to Jacques and to Sipe for not showing their true positioning in the tribe. And I feel like we've talked about how Rocco didn't seem to know where exactly they sat, and I feel like someone like Mike might not also realize how much Jacques will be in there through that Misfit alliance, and maybe he's hoping to kind of be the fourth if there has to be a Sa'ula thing, and if it's Sa'ula and Laomei, then he's in that position of power. For me, looking at it and having all the information that I do, I don't really like the move from Mike, and I feel like I've never understood why he can't work with Rocco. I've never understood the laser focus on Rocco. Rocco, I mean, to his credit, tried to work with Mike a lot, and Mike has never, ever been interested. I don't really get why, and I feel like working with Rocco would have been more beneficial for his game.
I mean, I'm going to give Mike some credit here, because whether it's founded or not, he finally accomplished a goal that he had been waiting for since the very beginning, which you can't say about a lot of players. You know, the opportunity was staring him right in the face, and sort of like what you said with Rob, he decided to take the shot. Now, again, I guess it was founded in this idea that he just felt like he couldn't trust Rocco. And once that seed had been planted and just sort of got time to grow and fester, this unfortunate weed popped up. And I do wonder as well if he was clouded a bit by this idea that, you know, he was close with Nathan and it seemed like him and Rob were getting along. I will give Mike some credit, though, in that I think if there is one thing to, again, another thing to break the wheel here, it is Rob, who I do not think handled the idol conversation very well at all. I know that Nathan might have screwed him up a bit with this discrepant information about, you know, what did Paul do with the idol after he got voted out, considering that we saw the two different narratives going on there. But the way that Rob fielded that definitely caused some alarms in Mike's head. So I don't necessarily know if he's in with them for the long haul, but I guess if he just saw it more so as an option of, okay, let me get rid of somebody who has been a monkey on my back from day one, further my position in the game. You know, it also, this is his first tribal council. It seemed like he was very nervous to just like make it through and be in the majority. If you look at it from that perspective, I could understand the reason he was making the moves. And it looks like there might be a potential of him to not necessarily stick with these amigos moving forward, considering how dubious he was of the way Rob was behaving around him.
I will say, though, for Mike, that I feel like time is of the essence for both his short-term and long-term game. And, like, he really needed numbers, and he really, I feel, needed Rocco. Like, short-term, I feel like now Rob and the Amigos, or the Misfigos, which is, by the way, what Twitter says we should call them, but I feel like the
Misfigos sounds like some sort of, like, evil medieval creature that you would find in a D&D campaign, so I love it.
Yeah, perfect. So, I feel like the Misfigos in that tribe have so much power, and, like, even if he makes it through, because I can get rid of Letitia next, and then, like, I guess, is he fighting with Kubus for that next spot? Like, that's not ideal. But even if Kubus is, like, the next out, like, he has no power, and they can do whatever they want. They could say next time, hey, Mike has the best connections on the other side. Look at Jeff, Mub, and Mike. That's the other biggest trio or the biggest group besides us. Let's get rid of Mike. Like, I just don't love that it's in someone else's hands. And that's the short term. From a long term perspective, okay, on a personal level that I can't see through my TV screen, he gets on better with Rob and Nathan. He wants to work with them, human to human, more than Rocco. I understand that. But I feel like sometimes, you know, you can't always get what you want because those people are so powerful. And working with them puts you into a minority, puts you into not a great position. Even at Emerge, they have so many people. So Ula need to start losing members. It's actually crazy how much power that they have. So I feel like, yes, he got rid of Rocco and, like, ticked for that random objective. I don't know why that was something on his bucket list. But Rocco, why didn't he trust Rocco? Rocco, for his part, people have compared him to Chris Noble. He seems like the sweetest, loyalist, gentle giant. And, like, even in the voting booth, everyone was saying, like, how much they liked him and getting rid of him. Like, he honestly seems like a really good soul. I don't think he'd ever lied to anyone in this game. Like, he was just, he was not going to be outmaneuvering Mike. And I feel like, as an ally, he's actually a really good shield/ally for Mike. But, you know, he wasn't writing Mike's name down the same way as Rob. So I feel like Mike had much more benefit for Rocco than someone like Rob did.
I really just think it's something where, like, if you get an idea in your head and you want to keep acting on it, but you don't get the impression or you don't get the opportunity to do so until much later in the game, that it just sort of clouds your judgment a bit. Because I do agree, I don't think this was a fantastic move for Mike down the line, but I could see the reasons why he wanted to make the move. And I do think there is some room for maneuverability. I don't necessarily know, as much as Maba and Jeff do trust Nicole and Nathan, they know that they, you know, that they have at least half an idol as well. I do wonder if, you know, these three people still sort of are hangers on to the Misfigos so much that they could still sort of have room to play. I'm still holding out hope that...
Who are they playing with that aren't the Misfigos at this point? There's like almost no one left.
I mean, you have your Dante and Meryl, who are staunchly against them. You have yeah. Letitia, who seems like they're floating around. Kubris seems like a free agent as well. So, yes, I know that we're approaching rapidly a point where we have this five-person alliance with Jacques and Darrow sort of as hangers-on, but maybe Mike also feels he can make a connection with Darrow. To your point, it seems like the former Laomedes don't necessarily know about the connection that the Misfits have, which is great. So I feel like he probably thinks there is room for maneuverability, even if that door is rapidly closing. Though again, it's Survivor South Africa. There is a lot of time between day 17 and day 39, especially with, you know, you have to wonder how tight these amigos really are, where yes, they are making decisions for themselves, but I mean, you see CPay making connections. It seems like Steffi surprisingly told us that she didn't care about anybody she was going back to onto Alo, which really surprised me. So I guess we'll see. But yeah, I could see how the decision that Mike made, I see where his logic was coming from. Maybe it was not the best guided logic, but I think he does seem to have his head in the game in a way that we didn't necessarily see in the previous few episodes, just because we saw literally nothing of him but anti-Rocco stuff.
Yeah, I'm never going to say that Mike's not a good player or a good strategist, even if I don't agree with this move. I feel like he brings chops to the game. I'm excited to see where it goes. I just also feel like yes, I see the perspective from a personal level. He wants to work with Robin Nathan. Those are the connections we have. But I also feel like Saula just screaming at the whole of OG Laomei reasons not to work with them, whether it's, oh, they have not one, but two idols on the separate tribes that they are not being forthcoming with, or, wow, these people, you know, haven't been voted out since episode two. There's so many of them. They're so tight. They keep having conversations on the bench. They have relationships in other ways. They tend never to go home looking at Sipe. You know, what other connections does she bring? I feel like they're just so obviously powerful. I mean, we're looking at it from our couch, but I can't believe people are looking at it and not seeing that they're kind of at the center of everything. I feel like you need to be forming a coalition to take down this incredibly strong Saula army, and I feel like Rocco would have been a really good henchman for that army. So I feel like that would have been a better move, but for whatever reason, not a reason I feel like we saw, he just felt like he could never work with Rocco, and I do think his demise in the game may come because of that. And that might be in several weeks from now. But I feel like Rocco was actually good for Mike's game in a way he wasn't good for Rob's game.
So I would actually almost apply that logic from Mike and apply it to Corbis more, because it does seem like, yes, Rocco would have worked with Mike even though Mike didn't feel the same way. But it does feel like, I don't know, Corbis could have very easily struck up a deal with Rocco, especially because Rocco was working with Dante and Meryl, who Kubra seemed very close with, on Ta'odlo. So I would love to move on from the Kubra's perspective of things. And why did he personally feel like, we see in that confessional, you know, oh, getting rid of Rocco would be a weird move, but it's better for my individual game. Why do you think he said that? Do you think it's really because of that logic that Rob's enforcing of, okay, we got to get rid of another person who could take immunities away from me at the merge?
I think it might have been similar to Letitia. I do think Corbis would have had a good relationship with Rocco, and they've definitely been working with similar people. But then I feel like the decision wasn't in his hands. And at that point, there might have been four votes already on Rocco, and he was just kind of going with the tribe to save himself in a way, similarly to like what Letitia did, but obviously with not as a close relationship with Rocco.
I mean, could we then say the same thing for Mike? That maybe
Corbis, no, because Mike's a swing vote. Like, Mike's in the middle.
Yeah, but maybe Corbis had made the decision to vote for Rocco beforehand. And
but
so
whichever
Mike
one it was of them,
like
I don't like it. So I don't know who to chastise for this, but I don't feel like it was good for either of them.
Yeah, so that's the thing. I want to shame them both if that's the case, because I do think that Corbis' logic was a little unfounded as well. I don't know. I think that the first seasons of Survivor just really enforced this mentality of how big, beefy guys are going to do really well in the individual game when, like, I don't know. I look at last season, and yes, last season was weird. And I know that's one of the reasons why they got rid of Vusi at that first merge tribal council. But like, looking at how the challenges went out during last season, it didn't really seem like the way that they were playing really benefited, you know, having strength and being able to throw javelins. It seemed like more so based on balance, which, if that's the case, look at some of these other people who, yes, might have a little bit of a smaller frame, but they're destined to do a lot better in these individual challenges than someone who has a lot of muscle mass to hold up.
Yeah, I still feel like Rocco's threat level for someone like Saula was that he was a really strong core member of what is their rapidly diminishing opposition, more than actually a challenge threat. And that's why I feel like what Rob is saying with the messaging of this is a strong person, it's not terrible messaging. Didn't love it, but it's not terrible for his actual core allies, because, you know, you can't say to Corbis, well, he's on the other side, because Corbis could very well be on that other side. But for his core allies, then you're going to a Steffi or a Nathan and say, okay, well, Rocco is a strong member of the opposition. That's why he's threatening. I'm a strong member of your group. I'm working for you. It's good if I can keep immunities out of the hands of the opposition. So I feel like as well, that's where it's quite different to painting Rocco as a threat to where Rob is as a threat. Yeah, Rocco wasn't going to win every challenge from the merge up until what is probably a final two. But I still think, you know, beyond that, I guess he's always more threatening than Letitia, other than the fact that Letitia might get taken to the end and take your spot.
Yeah, that's the thing, though, is that I feel like Letitia is much more threatening when it comes to this merge perspective, because I think that, you know, it's the thing about Survivor, and this is what has benefited Sandra so many times, is that her type of personality, and not to compare two of them, I feel like they're apples and oranges, but like, there's someone who gets targeted much more in the pre-merge, but then once the merge hits, who's going to waste a vote on them? You know, and maybe they might become wise and say like, oh yeah, Letitia has such a great story, she gets along so well with anyone, we don't want to take her to the end. But like, I don't know, if they're really looking ahead to the merge and you're thinking three-dimensionally, that seems more likely someone who would survive a vote over you at the merge, as opposed to someone like Rocco, who everyone's going to have eyes on no matter what. And it's not just because he's unbelievably good looking, especially with glasses on.
Yeah, I mean, Letitia brings her own threatening elements as well, but, you know, Rob said he's so laser focused on Dante. He talked about it. He told Nathan about it. And I feel like Rocco and Dante were really close, closer than we saw. I mean, Rocco, in his kind of his exit press on the Mnet website, he's saying how he wants Dante to win. So, but not even Letitia. I mean, rude, Rocco, but like, he wants Dante to win. They were a core two. And I guess Rob's kind of thinking if he can't take out Dante and he's leaving that to Nathan, he can take out what was, I guess, his duo with Rocco, and we just didn't see as much of how tight that pair were. But we definitely did see that those four, with, you know, Meryl and Letitia, were working against Rob and Nicole to the point where Rob thought he had to, you know, pull the votes onto himself. I guess he was so unsettled in that tribe that he wants to be taking out the power force in that tribe. He feels like those are the people really opposed to him. He's working on it now. He took out Rocco. He's getting, you know, rid of Dante, hopefully on the other side. And I think he feels like those are the people who are worst in the game for him.
Can we move on and talk about, you mentioned the misfit, you know, section of this, because I really want to talk about Jacques and Sipe's two varied ways of approaching this new third iteration of the tribe.
Yeah, well, Jacques wanted to be purple, and you know someone is important in the season when they get a confessional to explain why they you might be hearing slightly less from them in the next phase of the game because they're going under the radar. I mean, I feel like Dominic in Ghost Island got the same treatment where it's like, look, some people you haven't heard from at all. You're going to hear a little bit less from me, but I'm just letting you know it's all okay. I'm right here. I'm actively trying to be purple to the point where he bathed in purple paint. It was the most beautiful picture of what he was trying to do.
This, I think it was one of those things where I would probably, maybe that's another comparison between Jacques and myself. I would totally go for the most outlandish way to cover yourself in paint possible. And I do love that everyone went with that theming as well. Like we see, I think it was what Nicole or Meryl was the first person to do it and did a couple little war paint touches. Cut to Jacques trying to yes and it and covering his whole entire head in paint. But I mean, you could see throughout, like, he's going to have paint in his hair until day 39, whether he's on the island or not. Like, there's no paint thinner available on the island to wash that stuff out.
Yeah, so they need to swap from washing Nathan's hair all the time and try and give Jacques some of that treatment. He's the one who needs it more than Nathan does.
Yeah, exactly. Or just like shave it all off. I know those luscious locks have worked so well for him, but like considering how much we saw the paint still in his hair and on his face so many days later, like that's going to remain as remnants. But I thought the swap mechanism was fun too, because we've seen like the paint covered eggs. We've seen just draw buffs. This is a way to really get like nice and messy and I guess literally wear your colors on your sleeve to promote, you know, what this new configuration is. I mean, Jacques, I think, really outlined his game nicely in the beginning of this episode when he said 1.0 Jacques was not great. And I would say, I think first two episodes Jacques was good. Third episode Jacques was not good at all.
No.
But I do feel like Jacques 2.0 was able to, you know, build his game back up a bit. And I feel like now he's positioned himself perfectly where, yes, he is also someone who is pumping up this Amigos alliance a lot more. But he does seem to be close with Sipe. He has these advantages that I cannot believe this, Shannon. For the first time, maybe, on this season called Island of Secrets, somebody is keeping a secret on the season in that he has not told anybody besides Sipe about his idol or his extra vote. He has his third armory has been built on this island. Maybe it's in the same spot. I'm not entirely sure. And it seems like, you know, he's trying to make good inroads as well. He does approach Rocco and try to, like, throw him a scattered lifeline, though he doesn't really have he does it half-heartedly of like, yeah, I guess we could get rid of Rob. Sure, I'll throw you a bone here for you to chew on while we end up, you know, cutting your throat down the line. So it seemed like he's in a good spot. For some reason, Mike felt like he wanted to work with him going into the swap as well. So it does seem like his opportunity to just burrow underground is going to work out for him here, despite the fact that, like, if you look at the way the numbers were lining up and the fact that Kourbis, who seems super pissed off at him before the first swap, totally seems fine with him now.
Yeah, I feel like I'm just thinking about that confessional as he talks about how he wants to be hidden while covered in purple paint, and I'm like, I feel like maybe Jacques is the one person on the season who could appreciate the irony in that as it was happening, and I really hope that he did. I'm just thinking about the paint. You know, Steffi put her hand in and she got water compared to the paint. Was there something better? Could we have got, like, tar and feathers? Like, you're going to Island of Secrets. I feel like water was way too neutral. Maybe it should have just been, like, air, and she just falls down that chute into Island of Secrets.
Or should have been Biostrath. Like, you're gonna need this on that. So drink from it like a trough, little piggy.
I feel like actually that would have been good if you like get a burger and it's like everyone will hate you and you just take that off the Island of Secrets.
Ooh, that would have been fun. Yeah, I'd be like, oh, well, here's some good news. Here's a piece of food in here that you're going to take with you, and you're going to enjoy it on the Island of Secrets. I will also say, you know, I like the CPay thing. I'm a little disappointed that all Steffi got was just, hey, you get to join the losing tribe, because unlike Tanya, she didn't have a choice of it. But I mean, I could quibble with less, or yeah. I could quibble with more stuff.
I mean, last week they gave them a whole idol. They need to take it down sometimes. Like, we can't be giving out idols every week.
Yeah, that's very true. So I think Steffi luxuriated, and it seemed like, for what it's worth, she was fine with not getting an advantage here. She was just happy with, you know, having the decision out of her hands. And it also seems like next week she's going to take the decision firmly in her hands for promptly making up for the fact that she did not do anything this week.
She was only happy because she wasn't tied and feathered. That would have been a way more interesting editorial choice. So next time when we see the paint thing, make it a little bit more negative for the person going to Island of Secrets. But yeah, Jacques, I think he's in a great spot. He's finally realized where he needs to be for this phase of the game. CPay, I want to talk about, because she is queen of the universe. We know that. It's CPay and Beyonce ruling the world, for sure. But I do think, why rant at your tribe mates? And like, also in the secret scenes, like, the scene went on and I was like, oh my god, make it like, stop.
The extended version is so much worse. CPay, what are you doing? And this is where the CPay saber, we really see it cut both ways, where we saw the open forum aspect work really well last episode, where it seemed like, to bring the Misfits even closer together, CPay said, you know what, let's just all talk it out of who we want to get rid of. And yes, maybe people, it might have grounded people's gears that they decided to, you know, announce they were getting rid of Tanya right there, right then. But I think it was a good unifying message. I guess she felt like she was trying to do the same thing here. But my God, did it look more like a lecture than, you know, a halftime locker room speech, to the point where Mike called it a sermon. Like, it was, it came off as pretty patronizing. And she unfortunately, you know, ticked off one of my survivor pet peeves, which is essentially when people declare to other people, you're not playing the game, which I understood where she was coming from. She vocalized in her confessionals of like, look, I don't want to end up at the merge with all of these physical targets, which I don't know why you would want to say that, considering that those are like four or five people they would want to get rid of over you. But I guess if she wants to vocalize like, hey, I might be a weaker person on this tribe, so don't get rid of me, she'd want to put forward this attitude of like, yeah, let's get rid of the strong. But I'll apply the same logic that you had with Meryl's idol here. Why did she need to say that in front of everybody? You know, why would she not just espouse that to like people in one-on-one ways to make greater connection, instead of really make other people sweat and have them build a possible, you know, argument against you by being like, wait a minute, she wants to get rid of the strong people. She's talking literally about me. Now CPay's on my radar. It just seemed like, it just seemed like a really short-sighted way to, you know, vocalize why you're doing things and really draw attention to yourself. And that's, to Jacques' you know, credit, the last thing you want to do at this point.
Yeah, I have no explanation for why this happened, where it came from. I mean, the thing she was saying, so she's going against, like, physical threats to the physical threats. She's talking about, you know, people who haven't had to go to tribal to three people who haven't had to go to tribal. In the extended scene, she's talking about people who haven't had to play every challenge, which seems a little petty. Like, I mean, they're only doing what they have to do. And then it just like cuts to Letitia seeing that as offensive. I don't understand why she did this. And I also feel worse about it because I don't feel like she was ever in trouble. So I can't even be like, oh my God, she came here. She was weak on the bottom. Like, she was almost in the Letitia spot, you know, where she might have gone home. Like, I never ever felt like CPay was going home here. She was well insulated by Rob. Her name never came up in true CPay fashion. So, like, why? There was no desperation. There was nothing here that made it necessary. I feel like, go one-on-one and do that. Of course, she has played much, much, much more of the game than everyone else. She's been to every single tribal but one. She has had to compete in every challenge. But two, because she was an Island of Secrets. But her tribes have been losing a lot. She's played the game. She's gone to every beach, as she said, and Island of Secrets. She has absolutely seen 360-degree view of Samoa and what is happening in this season. I feel like also you don't want to show that. It's like, look how high my resume is. You guys suck. And I'm playing the game fully.
You're saying, like, look. Yeah, look how much I've done at this point. Don't I look like a great person who could possibly build a writing resume, people? Like, don't you realize how good I am at tribal council and you're not? It just, again, and we're talking about intent versus content. The intent behind this was just so repulsive to all these people.
And the content, like, if you're wanting to both things were bad.
Like, I mean, I think Mike was just a great person to cut to after this, because he was just beside himself of like, what are you doing? Is it the point of the game to not go to tribal council? Why are you saying that we're bad players because we didn't go to tribal council? It's just, it's a weird way for like Sipe to simultaneously to pump up her own game. But why would you want to do that at this point? Again, maybe she thought that like, okay, there's a chance that I could be targeted because I'm one of the older people. You're looking at a Leg Tisha over there who's about to like cut open one of her major body parts in a Nathan-like fashion later on, who you could very easily target above you. It just seems like something weird to do at that moment. And look, Sipe has a way of working her magic. It doesn't seem like anyone was targeting her additionally because of that, but it's a weird way to make a first impression.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like in Survivor South Africa, they're going to show us that because it's entertaining and interesting, even if it has no relevance. But I feel like, why? Even if her relationships and her connections and Saula running the tribe make this completely fine, which I think is what is happening, there was no reason. I mean, I think I say it at this point almost every week. Just do nothing. So much of Survivor is just doing nothing. And that is what Jacques is trying to do. And for that, I commend him. But I do still love from both of them that people don't seem to gauge where they are in the tribe. And that's amazing for them to have power but be under the radar. Sipe somehow is still under the radar, even though she gave this whole speech. So didn't love the speech. I'm still three quarters through making my golden statue to Sipe. It's in my apartment. It's a whole thing. But I still love her. This was a misstep for me. And especially because Sipe's issues have mostly been at the beginning, like we saw in the first couple of episodes, that was when people maybe didn't warm to her. She takes a while to warm up to her, and then you absolutely love her. So I feel like, come in, lie under the radar, and let people get to know you organically, and then they will love you because you have to love Sipe.
I hereby nominate her unofficial nickname to be Speech Pay. Do I hear a second?
Does that work less well than Leg Tisha? Which, by the way, we're going to need some Twitter accounts for some body parts. Leg Tisha now is the name of that account. Nathan's hand account. I'm pretty disappointed the episode was like a day ago and that hasn't popped up yet. Like, would the foot account and the hand account be run by the same person, or would they be fighting? I mean, there are layers upon layers about what could be done here.
Can we talk about Letitia for a second? Because I had trouble finding Leg Tisha, I apologize. I have trouble figuring out exactly what happened here. So in the challenge, which was Hot Pursuit, which is super interesting. I feel like we saw it in Australian Survivor, but I feel like we haven't seen it otherwise since like Survivor Karamoan. So it's been a hot second, but it seems like second. Letitia, a Hot Pursuit second. Thank you very much. I see I've imparted onto you. I've rubbed off on you in the worst ways possible. But it seems like Letitia tapped out of the challenge, which is like probably more insulting, is to get injured not during a challenge but during walking out of a challenge to, you know, speech pay. You know, why did you not listen to the speech, Letitia? You should have tapped out of these challenges. Sipe hates that, but she's walking back to the bench or this like structure that Steffi's sitting on, and it seems like a rogue wave a la Jeff Probst and Millennials versus Gen X hits her from behind, and she like falls forward, hits the structure, and apparently cuts her leg down to the bone, which I would think was a little Nathan-esque histrionics if she wasn't a nurse, where I trust her judgment there.
Yeah, I feel like my entire Survivor life just flashed before my eyes. Like, I'm completely certain if I were to ever go on the show, I would definitely get injured walking back to the bench. Like, now that it's been done, now that it's been said, I'm like, yeah, I'd be medevac because I walked back to the bench in the first challenge. Like, that feels right for me. So I definitely empathize with Leg Tisha here. We can't call it Leg Tisha for very much longer. It is a shame. And I want to talk about the challenge as well, because we got a couple of questions about this. I feel like this was not a great challenge from the new Ta'alo's perspective. I mean, there was so much variance where like half of it was out of the water and half of it was in the water, to the point where Sanunula started where they could sprint and had not tired out from being in the water, you know, at the get-go. And by the time that the other tribe got to the beach, they were obviously tired from having walked through the whole water, and they never recovered from that. So I also feel like that was a strong tribe, especially with Rocco. I mean, Steffi would have beasted this challenge more than anyone, I think. But she was obviously sitting out.
Steffi would have been like, just give me all the weight to begin with, I'll run. Which I thought was interesting as well. I feel like the very first time we saw this in Palau, you know, Oolong was able to prolong. Well, Karor actually really got ahead because they were able to basically say like, hey, Katie, Janu, Jen, Karen, like drop out right now, and we'll just take the weight and run with it. And you have, you know, Tom, Ian, and Greg just and Kobe absolutely beasting it. I do feel like as strong as Ta'alo is, I'm a little surprised that as much as Sipe was slowing them down, why she didn't tap out earlier.
Did you not hear her sermon? Because you're not supposed to tap out the challenge.
That's true.
You're supposed to
That's
play
very
every
true.
Single
I
facet of the game.
Speech Pei would be an entire hypocrite if she decided to tap out there. But I mean, when you have such big buff guys,
she was like, I'm out. Bye.
I feel like Rocco like lifts this amount of bags like every day of his life. I think you could have very easily just handed things off to him and Rob, who the two most physically intimidating guys in the game, and Kubis, who's definitely up there as well, and just have them, you know, go the other way. I do agree with you. It seems odd that for a four-sided structure they were running around, why not put them on the other two sides, which are sort of like half in and half out of the water, instead of one on the sand and one in the water? I mean, it didn't really matter, because when you have Dante on the other tribe, he is Aquaman. He lives in the water. So I think putting him at the front of the Saula contingency was going to work out anyway, because he just made a huge dive for it. I mean, this might be the shortest, not in real time, but shortest edited version of Hot Pursuit that we have seen, because it just seemed like Saula absolutely crushed it. They can't handle moving little balls around a little structure, but they can move around a big structure. So that's where their strength is.
Yeah, this feels unfair that it was so suited to Aquaman's strengths. I feel like next week they're going to have them walking through fire to suit Rob to make it fair. But I do think that the main thing that was the problem was that it was a disadvantage for them where they started off. And that, yeah, the strategy, I think, is definitely let the weakest links go back to the bench, even if they're going to get injured doing it, and let those really, really strong players, you know, because you're only as slow as your weakest link in this challenge, so why keep your weak links in?
Right.
They definitely should have been doing that. I love the first challenge that was like this group version of an individual challenge. I love that there was so much tension in it, but they were all just like in this one frame. It was like an obstacle course, but very mini. And like all their actions were so big on these like tiny little decisions. I just thought the aesthetics of that were really, really enjoyable for me to watch.
And I know a friend of the podcast, LaRue, tweeted out that this was sort of like, yet like the immunity challenge last week, it was an adaptation of an individual challenge. I think he coined it from like San Juan del Sur. It reminds me a lot of Operation Balance Build, which is where you sort of take the disc through the structure and you pile it up. That's the one from last season where Werner and Tom were super close. I think it was maybe at the final five and Tom ended up winning it. So I do love the teammate aspect of it, especially considering it was right after they covered themselves in paint. So it was a great way to sort of get to know you. And it's always really fun as well when you do like the hushed intensity, like when you have them be like, no, stop it. Like you have to, it's like golf, like where you need to, you can't be screaming out loud like you want to be, but there's a lot of intensity there where they really wanted all those Lao Mei rewards, even though it didn't really help Lao Mei in the second course of the game, and maybe it's not going to help Ta'alo here as well. Maybe those rewards are cursed, Shannon.
No, they definitely needed the reward, because Dante took the flint to the other tribe, so they absolutely needed flint, which Rob has now tied to his belt. I don't know how this would, they can never vote him out, right? If the flint is literally
no,
tied
no, well,
to
somebody's
his belt.
Gonna somebody's gonna pants Rob on the way out and take his pants, and that's how they're gonna get the flint back.
If you want the flint, you'll have to take my pants. And like from the female viewers, I have to say,
I was gonna say like yes, thank you, I will. Thank you for offering.
Didn't want to vote you out, but if those are the terms, those are the conditions.
It's like Angelina 2.0. I'm voting you out for your pants because there's a flint tied to it.
Yeah, I went like full gates there. Yeah, I want to talk as well about Sanula, who as well have a whole stock take that they're doing of all of their items because so many things go missing. And one of the things that we see coming back to bite them all the time, I mean, the idol lie and how much disinfectant and light was kind of put onto all the lies in this episode. I really enjoyed all of that like misinformation. To go back to Rob for a second, sorry, I should stop talking about Rob, but yeah, I agree that I don't feel like he really handled the conversation with Mike about the idol so well, but also like what a terrible position to be in where he's like, what did Nathan say? And then he's like, oh, well, Nathan said that you have the idol, pretty much. Like, that's a really, really hard spot to be in, especially when Rob's original lie that Paul took it home was so good. Like, is this something that they discussed before they swapped and that Nathan screwed up? Like, how could this have been so badly done?
Yeah, I don't know if this was something where, like, they finally learned to get on the same page last episode with the two-part idol lie, which we will definitely get into. God, I'm starting to love Meryl versus Nicole, especially the first part of that episode where she's like, oh, Nicole, you should dig for the idol. No, there's not enough time. We got to pack our camp. No, I think there's enough time. I think you should start digging. Why aren't you digging? You should start digging now. And Nicole just trying to play her best, like, five-year-old in the sandbox, like, half-heartedly, you know, digging, like, an inch hole. I know they were very suspicious of her, but, like, that just cemented it completely. Yeah. And I love Meryl calling her out on it. It was so much fun. But, yeah, I think Rob specifically replying with interesting was maybe the worst reply to it. Like, I say, you know what, if you want to agree to it, sure. Maybe what you could say is like, well, Nathan told that you guys that because he wasn't sure how much he could trust you, but here's what the truth is. Like, maybe I feel like he's keeping Mike at arm's length right now, which, as we were saying, Mike has less and less options to go against Rob, but he's not necessarily helping the situation. I just think Rob leaving the conversation off by being like, huh, and then not following up, but it was not a great look, but oh my god, so much fun idol stuff. I love that the convoluted lie that Nicole spun last episode is bearing more and more fruit over the course of this episode.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would have more of an issue with it if it had come back to doom Rob in this episode. And it's not results oriented because he still has a good handle on that relationship, and that's what the vote showed. You know, if Mike is going to Rocco and saying, like, look, I wanted to work with Rob, but I can't fully trust him. He's not being honest with me about the idol. Let's take out that threat. Then, yes, he handled it terribly. But while I think it was, you know, not a great look in a very difficult situation, he still has so much control in that conversation with Mike. And if Mike's going to be an issue about it, well, Mike has no more power in that tribe. And Rob and Saula and Jacques can vote Mike out. So he's okay with it. But so it worked out well for him. And whatever... I don't know why. Lame was desperate to work with Saula, who keeps lying to them. Nicole's lie. Why did she make the poem that the idol was, like, right there? If she was, her whole point was that she and Nathan wanted them to think, like, she never had time to get it. It's like, okay, the idol was right where we are. Like, the plan should have been that it was, like, in some ridiculous position that they never could have got to. Imagine if they didn't swap. Would the lie have been that she never got the time to dig it up, even if they swapped, like, an episode from now? Like, how was that going to go?
Oh, I would do it today, but you know what? I have so much stuff to do. Oh, no, I twisted my ankle. I can't dig right now. I broke my wrist. It looks like I won't be digging today. Like, I agree. Maybe if you put it someplace really precarious, like, oh, it's on the tallest tree on the island, or it's buried 15 feet out in the ocean. Maybe that would have given you more hesitancy to go out and dig. But when you're saying, like, yes, the idol's right in front of us in a very handy location, but I don't think I'll dig today. You're pretty much showing, yeah, you definitely have the idol, which we definitely will talk about the Dante thing where, like, again, he had this really interesting pitch where he was correct partially where he said, yeah, she has a full idol. But I think the bigger thing that he came across with his pitch to Maba, which was like, you can't trust Nicole because she came to me and said she was targeting you, very much painted over the actual accuracy he had as to why they shouldn't trust Nicole.
Yeah, I feel like with Meryl and Dante, I kind of love how they're just on the side, just looking at each other like, so Nicole is lying, right? Like, all the time. Yeah. I love that dynamic. I think that Meryl and Dante are in a very bad spot, very unfortunate swap for them. They go with people that they A, haven't met, or B, were against with Nicole. I think that there's enough ammo there that it should be able to work. I mean, I've said a million times in this podcast, I don't get why Lame wants to work with Saula. So if you plant that very accurate information with the idol, you know, everything that you have about it, and show how sketchy Nicole is in that situation, I feel like that's really good. Point to all of Saula's threatening elements, I feel like that would be good. But it kind of became a bit too obvious when he was like, I heard her specifically saying your name. Like, the lies became pretty overdone. And I mean, look, Maba seemed to believe it, to his credit, but then Jeff comes back by saying, like, that doesn't really make sense, because it doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, Jeff, really interesting perspective from him as well. It's sort of like, people have sort of pointed out what you said about Jacques with him the past few episodes, where he always seems to get, like, a little bit of content every episode, even when Saniula wasn't going to tribal council. Yeah, here he gets this moment where he's like, I think it's me versus Dante, which is a very interesting way to look at things. I would think it'd be more like Nathan and Nicole versus Dante.
What superhero is Jeff if that's the case? Like, you need a superhero name, you need a superpower. We've got a lot of other dynamics happening against Dante right now.
I mean, I guess he's a Black Manta, considering if that's Aquaman's nemesis.
Wow, I do not know enough about Aquaman to be able to follow what you're saying.
Here's the question I have, though. Is Dante not a hero from an edit perspective at this point? Is Dante the villain of our season right now?
Yeah, I mean, people definitely didn't feel great about some of the stuff when he was against Tanya, but I feel like he was painted as correct when Tanya was seen as really annoying to us. For me, like, besides, I guess, some of the Tanya stuff, we felt like maybe he went a little bit too far, but we don't know what his situation was and I guess how annoyed he was at that point, just living with her all the time. But is he the villain? Like, I'm enjoying what he's doing, and it might be, like, I guess, Hansi, and so I guess it is villainous. But yeah, taking the flint, planting lies. I mean, for me, if he's a villain, it's a fun villain because it's not crossing any lines, and it's just duplicitous, which is fun in Survivor.
And also, Survivor South Africa has a habit of making your villains very complicated characters to the point where sometimes they win seasons of Survivor South Africa. So I wouldn't necessarily say, like, Dante's going down, this is going to be the end of Dante, because I think we were sort of waiting for Tom's downfall last season, and the exact opposite happened. He had a rise, an uprise, if you will. And so I think that, you know, we're not necessarily going to see a fall from Dante. I just think it's super interesting how a lot of his content has been him sort of like complaining a lot of the time. Like, the stuff with Rom in the beginning of the episode was so interesting about, like, oh, we want to trade the, you know, the paraffin for the knife because Rob's all about fire. I'm not entirely sure why he's still complaining about that. And then he swaps over, and yeah, I agree that he's in a pretty screwed position. But him deciding to really, you know, paint Nicole in a bad light, again, I feel like it overwhelmed the actual accurate information to the point where Jeff sort of like shrugged that off. He said, yeah, I mean, he's very, Dante's lying about the first part. Why wouldn't he be lying about the second part? So he sort of like is working against himself. But I just think it's so much fun because I totally thought preseason he was going to be this very chill coffee house dude who didn't really care about the game. And I think he's totally done a complete 180 here and has become the sort of guy who's almost doing too much in the game, so much so that it's working against him. And I love how wrong I was about that preseason.
It's not even preseason. I mean, I think 2 weeks ago I was like, oh, he's like the Frankenstein's monster and Meryl's controlling everything. And like, I basically thought he didn't have a strategic bone in his body. And you can disagree with what he's done since, but he's definitely thinking about the game on levels I didn't realize he was until last week.
Right. So I guess let's talk about the Nathan Nicole Jeff Maba connection. Like we said, it was a challenge a little bit, but how much do you feel like this is going to hold on, especially if Sanula goes to tribal council? Do you think it's a pretty much open and shut, you know, 5v2?
This is a terrible situation for Dante and Meryl. I mean, they have votes to split based on the fact that they have an idol. They know about the idol. Jeff seems like he's against Dante, and he's him versus Dante. It's like, you just met this guy. Nicole's always had a thing against Dante. Nathan has been told by his brother on the other side to get rid of Dante. Like, this, I don't know how they possibly both make it out of this tribe if they go to a tribal council. I'd be interested to see it, but I feel like even in a secret scene, they were kind of talking like, we have to start making alliances, but who? Because they're really the people who don't have a connection to anyone else. That's just unfortunate on their behalf, to be honest.
I would say I'm reticent to say that they were swap screwed because their actions on their former tribe also informed this. You know, like, I wonder maybe if they had bought into Nicole's lie a little bit more on, you know, Ta'alo 2.0, if they felt like she was under their wing only to blindside her later on, would she be so adamant about setting things up against them? You know, Meryl does have this idol, which now it seems, we were taking stock last week of information, now it seems like literally everybody in the game knows about Meryl's idol just based on how we sort of disseminated into two tribes there. So she's safe for a round, and I mean, you could say the only risk that they had was to say, we don't know who we're playing the idol on, sort of like a Rosalie Darrow situation. But like you said, they have enough votes now to split on the two of them that they're pretty much screwed. And they would have been screwed even if they lost and Steffi had come in as well, considering how close Steffi and Nicole are. So, I mean, they just better hope that they keep winning out here, that there's more challenges in the water, because otherwise I see only one of them making it to the merch.
Yeah, I would say that actually if they had lost, maybe that would have been like the only argument they have, like, to Maba and Jeff, you know, Steffi's going to come back and they're going to be so powerful. But now they can just take them out. There's no problem that Lao Mei are trying to work with Saula to the merge. I don't know where they go from here. But I do want to talk about Darrow, who is, he came in with this like adorable edit. Everyone loves him. How can you not? He used the CPay connection to get in good with Nicole, which is exactly, you know, what the Misfits were meant to do. So great job there. And what I really loved was him retelling the story of Felix's blindside, kind of like he'd fought a lion and not just like lost a fake idol in the sea.
Oh my God. I love it. I'm trying to, so he's telling this, the Felix blindside to Meryl. He's like, he tried to see who was the man and I showed him one, which is a lot of fun, and it sticks towards the Drow characterization that we know and love to the point where, whether it's food or paint, I think the dude just likes things on his face. But maybe the wrong audience to tell that story to, considering like Meryl now says, well, now I need to get rid of Drow because he took out one of my closest allies. Why would I trust him after that?
But everyone just thinks he's so cute and like he's our ironic favorite. How can they not?
Yeah, I'm actually, I'll call it now. I'm predicting Drow makes at least the final six. Because I think that even if, you know, he does get targeted for being like, oh, he's a stronger guy, like, he is just so amiable and comes across so naive that I really don't think he holds that much of a threatening status, especially compared to some of these other people that anyone, again, would want to waste a vote on him. So I'm so happy. I think we're going to see Drow at least for like six more episodes, which makes me very happy.
Hey, last season I called Jean and Tom as the final two as a joke, and now Drow, Letitia, final two. Like, that's what's happening.
Oh my God, the leg versus the face. Who gets messier?
And now let's take a break to hear from our sponsors. And we are back. All right, Mike, so moving on from legs and faces and hands and all the body parts that are getting Twitter accounts this week, I want to talk about the Chizzy. So take it away, Jacob Saker Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3.
I feel like now that PK's not on the podcast, some people are getting some extra points from me, so those people lucked out.
Yeah, see, that's the thing is that I thought, like, okay, I have a 2-1-1 pretty much in mind, but I feel like there's some sort of mentality change between a 2-1-1 and a 3-2-1. We're now, like, everything's jumbled up in my mind. So I'll defer to you first while I sort of, like, get my ducks in a row here. What are the points you're doing this week?
Yeah, I actually had, like, a real clear 3-2-1. So some people definitely would have gotten, like, stiffed on that, and now they get more points. So for me, I am going to give 3 points to Rob. I guess this goes against the grain of conventional wisdom this week. I just so agree with his move. I feel like Saola are in such an incredible position, and it's thanks pretty much to Rob and Nathan and their communication and their social relationships and their strategy in this episode. You know, he takes out a really big number for the very, very small other side. He brings in the connections. We didn't see Jacques and Sipe talking to, you know, Mike, for example, and Corbus. We saw that it was his plan. We saw him making those relationships. We saw him even dealing with issues, maybe not in a great way, but stuff like the idol stuff. It all worked out for him. A unanimous vote against Rocco. Everyone wanted to work with his plan. And I don't think that a shield shooting at you would have been a very good spot for him. I think that he has allies who won't care that much that he's threatening. Nathan will never vote him out in a million years. I mean, I truly believe that. We would have had PK on the podcast and I would have said that about Tevin, so maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like he's got loyalty on his side. He has an idol on his side. He has so much power and he has other shields. I mean, as I've said, I think Steffi's going to be incredible in these challenges. He's now working with Jacques, who's an obvious strategic shield. Other people can be shields in different ways, and I think he's kind of well insulated on every side. I'm very happy to give him 3 points. 2 points are going to go to Nathan, another person who I think just made the dynamics happen this episode, and also as an apology. And I know that it's funny because I've been ragging on the fact that he shouldn't have points, and I was going to give him 1 in this episode.
You want to take away points.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm giving him 2 now to say sorry for that. He gets an extra point because PK's not here, but he does deserve it because I feel like he was the second most important person in this episode. Even if Jeff calls him a drama queen and he hurts, you know, a different part of his body every week, I think the dynamics were completely created on either tribe through him and Rob. He's in the majority. And one thing I absolutely loved was that he went back to Marba and he said to her that he had told Rob to work with Mike and Corbus. And now when Marba shows up tomorrow to the challenge and Mike is there safe, she'll know that Nathan had a big hand in that. And that's why he's someone that she should work with. Mm-hmm. And if they're thinking of going with a Dante or a Meryl against them, that inbuilt connection that he's spoken about is happening on the other side. She knows that that's present, and that's such a good reason to work with Nathan on this side. So I think he helped so many people out in this episode. Nicole as well, in a great position because of him. And I'm going to give 1 point to Jeff. I just really liked his read on the situation with Dante. I feel like everything we've seen of him so far, even if he hasn't been to Tribal Council, which Sipe would take issue with, but it does show us that he's on the ball. I don't think we've been shown that he's been wrong about a lot yet. And I think that even just that little thing is worth a point. Obviously, the big omission from me is Mike, who I feel obviously had a huge strategic say in this episode. I feel like I said, I thought he was a swing vote more than Corbus, but I just disagree with it so much. And I feel like Lao Mei are losing the war and the battle, the wheel battle against Saola. So I can't give him a point there.
All right. So actually, before we get to that, I just want to say briefly here, I am so fascinated by Nathan's arc. Like, it's even, we talked about how great Tanya's arc was, going from, like, you know, crazy lady essentially to like the calm logic of the tribe. And to have Nathan go from first episode where he's like totally in control of things to episode two where he basically quits the game and then gets, you know, saved by his allies. Episodes like 3 through 6, he's going through these crazy machinations in his head where he wants to throw the challenge and then he's homesick and then he gets revived by the Island of Secrets. And then episode 7, where now he's coming across as a big drama queen. I mean, we have seen so many shades of this guy. It's not just one coat of paint. He is basically, they mix all the colors together and he slathered himself in it. He may just be the most interesting character of the season at this point.
Yeah, I was definitely thinking, I'm like, what is his edit when they're showing us the hand thing? They make a point of showing us that people think he's a drama queen, like, but in an episode where I think he played really well and deserved 2 chizzy points. So I'm just like, again, it could just be because he is entertaining and we say Survivor South Africa likes to show us interesting things that are happening. But I also just feel like, is it going to be relevant to the insanity that is Nathan on the show? Because he is all over the place. I feel like he cannot be defined even in the 55 minutes that we have per week.
And I don't think that necessarily puts him out of winner contention either. Again, just because Survivor South Africa, a lot of stuff can happen, especially considering how maybe Rocco's boot is going to shake up the game profoundly. And we'll see where the snowflakes settle in this snow globe coming up. So from my points, I totally see your criticism of Mike's game from a long-term perspective, if we see exactly what happens to the wheel here. But I'm going to throw him a point here just because he did succeed in whatever illogical arguments he applied to wanting to get rid of Rocco. He did finally succeed in his goal, and it seemed like he made a connection with Rob as well on a new tribe where he was separated from his main allies that he's worked with for so long. And so the fact that, you know, we'll see exactly what happens from now on, but the fact that he was able to at least make some inroads and accomplish something so early on in this new tribe, in his first tribal council, I'll give him a point there. I'm going to give 2 points to Jacques, because I feel like he came in to a pretty precarious position. I could see maybe in a different set of circumstances where he gets targeted because, you know, he might be extremely dangerous. Rob doesn't exactly know what he or CPE came back from Lao Mei with. But the fact that he has such an armory with him and was able to slip so much underneath the radar. I mean, I really have to give it up to Jacques. Say what you want to about some of the other elements of his gameplay, but the fact that this is his 5th tribal council in a row, and he's only gotten 1 vote in that time there, is pretty crazy. And I think it just shows how he is able to play into some of these social elements. And the fact that he was able to slip under the radar, and unlike his misfit partner on the tribe, not draw a lot of attention to himself, is worthy of 2 points for me. 3 points. I gotta hand it to Nathan. I totally co-sign everything you said. I think that not only did he make a lot of moves this week that made inroads on both tribes, but I think he was able to, we saw a lot of blanks filled in as to some of the stuff he was able to do on Sinula. I don't exactly know if he's grating on people with the way he's coming across with some of his dramatic bits, but at least strategically, he seems to be in a good place. And now I'm very intrigued to see how the chizzy charts are looking, because now your fear of last week, Shannon, of Nathan rising up in the ranks might be coming true here.
Yeah, I mean, he really is. He keeps getting more points, but I can't disagree with it because I gave him 2 points. And like, I'm looking at it now and I'm thinking, Nathan's social game is something we've all spoken about since episode 1. You know, he got 6 points in episode 1, but then from there, they couldn't bring themselves to vote him out, even though he was a liability. Now we know everyone loved him on the second tribe that he was on, which is not something we knew. He's in the majority again. Like, he might be a little crazy strategically, but I do think that his social game has obviously been on point up till now, and that, like, social capital that he has paid dividends, and maybe that's why he keeps getting chizzy points. Also, Bryce was blinded by his looks. Those two things.
Yeah. Listen, everyone has their own criteria, and I'll throw some honorable mentions towards Rob, or at least, you know, you could question why he made the decision and whether or not it's going to pay off for him, but the fact that he had such a position of power, despite Rocco vehemently arguing against him, I think speaks volumes. And I'll throw points towards our honorable mentions towards Jeff and Maba as well, considering that they lost one of their allies once again in Mike, but they were able to make quick connections with Nathan and Nicole as well. And it seems like even though Mamba might have been led astray, they were brought towards the right path at the end to still being in position, even though they are pretty much the swing votes on the tribe, which is, to your point about Mike, a good place to be.
Yeah, I mean, now it's Sipe, Jacques, Nathan, and then Rob coming up, really fighting for those points. So we'll definitely see how it goes. I mean, I get your points for Jacques as well. I mean, I feel like honorable mention for me, because I totally get what you're saying. And I feel like he's completely approaching the game so well from here. And I still think so underrated that he and Sipe were just, no one knew where they stood in that tribe. That's a great thing. But he also didn't have that sermon, which takes away some honorable mention points from Sipe. And in speaking about that, I think we should get to the doof of the week, because it really kills me to say this. Like, I don't want to. And, like, please don't take my statue from me. But, like, that sermon is the only thing I can look at from the whole episode and just see no merit in. And I think that's what I kind of try to look at when I'm thinking of the doof of the week. So for Sipe, I love her. She's queen of the world. I still think she was doing good things in this episode, but I just don't understand why, like, telling people you're better than them, even if it's true, like, Sipe, don't go, like, we can all see it. You don't need to tell people that you're better than people.
Yeah, even good players have an off day. I totally agree with you. We have a daily double here on Doof of the Week, but I think it's great because it shows that one day in Survivor, you're up, and the next one, you're down, considering that we had Nathan as the Doof of the Week when I first brought this award about a few episodes ago, and now we're going to have Sipe do it as well. I think it just shows that when you stick your neck out and come up with some crazy ideas or do some crazy things, they're bound to go one of two directions. And I think we got to see how exactly they go in both directions through the course of Nathan and Sipe's game here.
Yeah, I mean, we can't retroactively do Doof of the Week for season 6, but Tom would have won, and he won the season. Yeah. So it's fine.
Exactly. It's all, like, again, it does not portend well to how they're going to do overall. I just think it's a lot of fun because, like you said, we talked about how Survivor South Africa has the warts and all or swarts and all edit, where we really do see the good and bad of each people's game. So I think it makes sense that there is a lot of variance as to people being shown in good light and bad light. As long as there's light on them in general, I'm happy.
Yeah, all right. Well, in saying that, let's shed some light on the sponsors with the Biostrath Variety Hour. Please take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and the U.S. Army Blues.
And now, it's the Biostrath Variety Hour with your host, Shannon Gates!
And also Mike Bloom.
All right, well, breaking news in this segment, and this is what's really important, which is that it's been pointed out on social media. I was so excited to see this. We have a new sponsor, and, like, it really is new. I went back to last episode to the title card at the end, and there were just the four sponsors, and now there's a fifth one that's been added in, and their name is Pro by Flora. They're a probiotic. They don't seem to have a Twitter or even a website that I found after quite extensive research, so I'm very worried about how this sponsor will assimilate with the others.
What are the chances that one of the sponsors or Survivor South Africa did, like, a George Glass scenario and they're like, oh God, we need another sponsor to, you know, make us really look prolific. Pro by Flora. Yeah, that's a company, because we have companies sponsoring this show where we still don't exactly know what they do. So I think Pro by Flora could get away with it, considering that they don't have, we don't exactly know. I'm assuming it's some sort of, I don't know, flower based probiotic,
yeah,
which sounds very weird. We don't know if they'll sponsor a reward challenge where we know exactly what they are. But if that's the case, I don't know. Or do you think they're muscling in on Biostrath's territory then in terms of supplements?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know enough about this. I wish we had Tevin on the podcast to talk about. Is a probiotic, like, a competitor to a natural supplement? I feel like there's not enough room for both of them. Like, one of them has to go.
Yeah. Like, it's either vitamins or supplements. You know, I don't think you can necessarily mix those two together. So maybe that'll encourage some competition amongst the brands as well, which I know you've been really jonesing for. But I mean, so I know I think the great Sean Yanel, who does some fantastic pixel art, some 8-bit art for Survivor stuff, he did some great stuff with Jacques and Ting Ting that I really suggest people check out on Twitter. But he pointed out that it popped up on the lower third when it says, when it gets intense ... Probiflora. So is it supposed to be like something to calm you down? Is it something to pump you up? I'm very unsure as to A, what they do, and B, if they actually exist.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, judging by their online activity, it's definitely possible that they're just, like, another account for Biostrath, because you can't spell Pro by Flora without Biostrath, just bio. But I mean, look, they're either major competitors or they're the same thing, or both. Because, and also, none of the sponsors this week tweeted about it. So,
yeah,
that's very odd for the sponsors.
Yeah, that is really interesting that they choose not to acknowledge it. Maybe it is sort of like a Tom Riddle Voldemort-like scenario, where if you erase the letters, then you find out that
I'm doing it right now. Okay, I can't do this on the spot.
Biostrath all along.
This is impossible. I'm gonna have to do it online.
I sort of compared it to, like, coming back from the edge of extinction super late in the game just to completely join the fray. But it seems like they're willing to shake things up, which makes me excited.
Okay, you can't completely unscramble Pro by Flora, but if you unscramble 8 of the letters, you get Airproof and Pro Labor. Ooh, some political messaging. Labor is one of the political parties in Australia, so maybe there's something
there. Maybe that's sort of like CPAY's shadow organization of, like, you have to work hard. We don't want people sitting down. I'm pro labor. I'm pro working.
So I don't actually think that this is a rabbit hole that is actually paying off.
It's as deep as the hole Nicole dug for the idol.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what is happening with this. I do think that they did show next week that everyone's, like, so excited about a reward. Like, it looks like it could be, like, something to do with loved ones. That's how excited everyone is. And then they're, like, competing for it. And now I really feel like they're competing for Pro by Flora.
Do you think it's family? Because I honestly am seeing ice cream bar. I think that's my personal guess.
With Pro by Flora.
Yes, exactly. Pro by Flora is actually a big ice cream healthy ice cream company. That's actually what they do.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm just really concerned about how they're going to assimilate into the sponsors group as, like, the new kid. As someone who moved around a lot as a kid, I really do feel like I identify with Pro by Flora. I might be... Should I change stands? No. I mean, I love BioStand, but
no,
Pro by Flora,
have to
I'm
stick
open.
The choice that you made with.
But I didn't know that something else existed.
I'm waiting to see what Pro by Flora does for me. You know, I'm not going to jump ship at the moment. Speaking of which, I mean, I know they didn't say anything about Pro by Flora, but any shadiness or any remarks at all from the big four this week?
Okay, so it was like a really weak week, I think, in terms of the shadiness, but I do think that the Biostrath account manager from last year might have moved to the actual Survivor South Africa account, because that was the account bringing the shade. They were like, perhaps Nathan should just stay away from sharp things. Coral, knives, Nicole's strategy, which is shady, but also I don't understand it.
I want to talk about something. I'm not sure if you saw this, but Mnet has started to do compilations of shady tweets about Survivor South Africa. That's my thing. Shannon, you are on the page. So
no,
I
did actually see that. I was like, hey, Mnet, I didn't know that you liked me so much.
But I can read some stuff out here, because these are from actual people, even though I do think there might have been a Mahindra tweet thrown in here. But here are some fun ones. Stefan Lombard: Nicole is a sociopath, but I'm not mad at it, TBH. Resha: still wondering how Darrow is still there. Tilt left cry emoji, tilt left cry emoji, tilt left cry emoji. Stefan Lombard against it once again. Lame May: am I right? Ryan Jason:
well, I think
I'm
found
so glad
the old social media manager from Biostrath.
Yeah. Ryan Jason: I'm so glad that Kurbis is out of Saula. He wasn't worthy of being in that tribe. And with a gif of somebody pushing a man off a balcony with boy bye as the subtitle. Let's see. Stacey Norman tweets: things we know for sure, Survivor Essay Edition. Nathan falls over a lot. Dante has no time for pants. And Mike stands a carb.
So specific.
Cape Union Mark did say something, that man is an accident waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Stefan Lombard, MVP of this segment. We stand when I think the great Marion DeVos of Survivor South Africa Champion said, why is everybody babying Nathan? And he replied, we stand a mediocre man, apparently.
Savage. That's like cutting to the core of who these people are. It's like too harsh.
Yeah. But a lot of shade on Nathan's injuries, and a lot of also like, yes, Queen Letitia for staying despite the fact that she cut her leg open. That's pretty much like the general gist, I think, of the social media roundup this week from Mnet.
I love that Mnet is listening to this podcast and trying to get the shade. Mnet, thank you for your support. I also want to say that Mahindra tweeted, if you could choose a superpower for your vehicle, what would it be? And to that I say, how could it be anything other than flying? Like, what other possible superpower would you... Like, they're obviously trying to tap into the superhero theme like we've done, both unsuccessfully. But, like, what other possible superpower?
Have it talk.
Who would want that? I mean, my car has a name, and I do love it. I do talk to my car. But I don't feel like
I want
it to talk
back. Like, when you get lonely, sometimes you want to have a conversation with somebody. I mean, I think a talking car would be fun if it had a really fun personality.
That would cut into the podcast industry. I do not endorse. You should be talking to me in your car, not to your car.
It would put us out of a job, definitely, of talking cars. yeah, flight would be, I mean, I guess invisibility, so you could take parking spaces but wouldn't get tickets because of it.
Well, that actually is pretty good. Yeah, I couldn't. I mean, like, also, you know, obviously teleporting, and you wouldn't even need your car. Like, if your car was just a teleportation device, that would be good.
Or time travel, so it could be sort of like a TARDIS, if you will.
I have no want to time travel, personally. I just really want to teleport. But, yeah, I mean, this was obviously a good question. We've been thinking a lot about it. I mean, in Sydney, especially, you definitely want invisible cars. I mean, there's nowhere to park. It's basically a necessity. Like, that's the next thing that we need.
So if we're doing Family Feud, top three here, I think. Number one has to be flight. Number two, invisibility. Number three, ability to talk. I think we're all agreeing.
It's not ability. No one said ability to talk. Not one person wants to talk.
That's the reward next week that everyone's freaking out about is a talking Mahindra car.
Your car does talk to you. It's called the radio. Like, we don't need the car to talk.
The only talking car in the world from Mahindra is up for grabs for the entire tribe.
If Mahindra are actually going to take these suggestions and build it into the next product, I hope they are not listening. We do not want a talking car. We just want our cars to fly.
Build a talking car, Mahindra. I dare you. I will buy your talking car.
Flash forward 1,000 years and you're like, well, I can't believe that we never got flying cars, but talking cars is where the future was at.
Yeah. Yeah, I really damned humanity by really pushing a company to make talking cars.
Yeah, I'm going to go in my car right now, which is also a time travel device, and see what they ended up with in the future.
Yeah, I should have gone back in time to stop myself from suggesting talking cars, because that's really when humanity has maybe been on a bit of a downslide, but really that's what put the nail in its coffin.
We absolutely don't need that. I mean, people, just be able to be with your thoughts sometimes. Like, that's fine too. Or listen to this podcast. You don't need to talk to your car. But I also want to say that steers are rapidly becoming the Rupert Tweets of Survivor South Africa. I am damn sure that they are not watching the episode. This is some bad social media content from the account that has the most followers of all the sponsors, unless Pro by Flora is famous somewhere and we just can't find it.
All right, lay it on me. What have they been saying?
Okay, what a flaming episode of Survivor SA once again.
Wow.
Terrible.
I mean, that doesn't even apply to anything.
It's so bad. I mean, I could go on. Another one, game changers don't get played. They play to win. Hashtag Survivor SA.
What?
Help me out with that one. Help me out, Steers. Help me out. I mean, you have so many followers. You should be paying your social media manager the most. And I honestly feel like they now have plans on a Thursday night and are not watching the show.
Game changers don't play to win?
Don't get played.
Is that what they said?
They play to win. But who are they talking about? What are they talking about? I don't know. It's so bad. People, I mean, please go onto the account. Yell at them.
We watched Survivor Game Changers, and a good amount of them did get played, so I don't know if that holds water.
Yeah, I mean, well, they're interested in fire, not water. So, but anyway, basically, they just retweeted a lot of other people with the hashtag Survivor SA. Like, they weren't even trying to tweet. It was such bad content. Steers, I'm going to need more, or you're definitely being replaced in my rankings with Pro by Flora. Steers used to be third.
Wow.
Yeah. And
wow.
They'll go down.
So they're getting replaced by, like, an absentee ballot, essentially, or a write-in candidate. That's pretty bad. Steers, up your game. Week 7 was not great for you, but hopefully, like CPay, you can recover here. Even though, ironically, they said nothing while CPay said everything.
Literally nothing would be better than their content. That's why Pro by Flora is better. Anyway, let's get to the questions. And to that, I want to say, Shannon Gates asked, I asked a question on my own thread. And then I chose it for the podcast.
It's like a talking car of questions. We're like talking back at you.
Talking cars aren't a thing. It's not. Stop trying to make fetch happen. All right. I asked, why does everyone come back from Island of Secrets either with a giant stick or being turned into a giant stick? Because did you see Steffi as well? Like, they're just handing out giant sticks on the Island of Secrets like they're handing out idols.
Well, here's my theory now. We know that they had a big shelter a la Ghost Island constructed for them at the beginning, right, with all the urns hanging from it. What if they're slowly dismantling the shelter?
I did have that
thought. They're saying, oh, this would be a good piece of wood. We have a new tribe, you know, a new shelter to build. And so they're just slowly taking apart the Ghost Island shelter and bringing pieces back for their new tribe.
Yeah, just brick by brick. Look, I'm a purist. There should be no more than 3 giant sticks in the game at any one time. So that's what I'm putting out there. It's too many. And also, we know Drow is a stick, and, like, there's going to be a stick alliance. Like, we can't. Sticks have not been this big a deal since 2008 in Survivor. No more sticks.
Well, I guess The thing is, was Tanya voted out with her stick and that stick got returned back to Island of Secrets? We don't necessarily know.
That's true. Okay, so now we'll have a tally of the Flint, all the idols, and the sticks, and this podcast will be 3 hours long every week.
If we could have a pile of sticks in the corner, please, that we all know who has them and when, I think that'd be the best way to track everything.
Steve on Twitter asked, how do people not seem to be picking up on Nathan and Rob, which at least from the edit, they don't seem to be, even though they have numerous conversations right in front of everyone?
So, I wonder if it's not necessarily that they're not onto them. I think it's that they don't care. Mm-hmm. And it's so odd to say that, but it's been pointed out multiple times. I mean, last episode, they're like, oh yeah, we know why C-Pay sent Nicole and Nathan to the Island of Secrets. So I feel like they know, but there's obviously a connection there. I think it's either they don't feel as strong as it is, or they just don't feel like it matters, which maybe that's sort of the impression of, you know, they came into the swap, the tribe under with the numbers that have sort of, you know, fought amongst one another. Maybe they thought they were the dysfunctional tribe, but they are far from dysfunctional at this point. They are a well-oiled machine. So it's just so, like you said, with all the information in front of us, it is so odd how you have people who know that information, but people are not necessarily doing a lot with it at the moment.
And I think that's why they got 8 chizzy points between us, because that's impressive. Like, whether they either don't know, which seems impossible, or don't care, which seems really dumb on everyone else's behalf, like, kudos to the Brewmans for making that work, because that's powerful. So Ula in general, very powerful. Jessica East wants to ask, what will Nathan injure next?
All right, well, let's see. We're running out of body parts here, because we had his foot and his head. I mean, it might be his hair. Maybe like he was working with the machete. Maybe he'll accidentally give himself a haircut. I can honestly see him losing an ear, potentially, from something to like Vincent Van Gogh it. Maybe his belly button or something small like that. Really, the sky's the limit when it comes to the amount of body parts that Nathan can injure.
I mean, we're only like a third of the way through the season. Like, the sky really is the limit. Will he have more chizzy points or injuries by the end of the season? That's a good bet.
That's a good bet. That's actually a good... It's going to be a real horse race between the two of them. I mean, he's pretty far ahead on chizzy points, but if he screws up more in future weeks and gets injured more in future weeks, that gap is going to close very quickly.
It's true, and there's like a limit to how many chizzy points one person can get in a week, but there's no limit to how many injuries you can have in a week. So he could make it up in 1 week. You know,
that's true. If he ends up in a full body cast, do we count that as like 256 or do we count that as one?
I know that would be 256.
Perfect. So if Nathan's in traction, then that's the best chance of the gap being closed.
There's a real shot. I mean, I don't wish it on him. I obviously, this is not what we want. And I love that all of his injuries don't seem bad enough that he's had to leave the game. And the medics are like, you're fine. It's really fine. So those are the kind of injuries we want, you know, not anything too terrible.
I love gray moment where Nicole walks up to Nathan and doesn't say like, oh my God, are you okay? She says, what the F is going on? And then you hear the music go, like, oh yeah, we thought this was gonna be this big dramatic moment, but no, it's just Nathan being Nathan.
You only get one per season and you used it in the first episode. So that's not many.
Yeah, it's the boy who cried injury.
Yeah. Zach Sinclair wants to finish it up by asking, if Rocco is Superman, does that make Rob Batman? He even made himself a utility belt. And we got a similar question from Sir Mayans on Twitter, who said that episode 1 of Survivor South Africa mentions the Hulk, episode 2 mentions Aquaman, the most recent episode mentions Superman. Are we getting a Survivor, say, Justice League, even though the Hulk is Marvel? Which, by the way, why so much DC? Like, they should be doing Marvel. Read the room of what people love at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe South Africa is just really into the DCEU. That's what's sort of keeping them in business, despite maybe their lesser quality. I mean, it's so interesting because I would say I'll make some more comparisons here. The Amigos are definitely the Suicide Squad. We're like, they're a motley crew of individuals who do really bad things sometimes, but like work towards a common good.
Well, so, like Jock is the Joker.
Yeah. Oh my God, he's the Joker.
The hashtag. You know, when you hear something, so you're just like, oh, we did it. How many hashtags this season is just going to be Jock's name with different, just spelled differently?
I, if you had given me a list of names before the season and said, okay, how many puns would you come up with for each one of these names? I think Jock would be near the bottom of the list. So I have no idea how he's wound up here, but he just inspires them from me.
Yeah, I mean, people are counting how many times I say Biostrath. I think they should start counting your Jock puns. Like, you might be actually competing with me.
Yeah, I think maybe we should have a list now of like either Jacques puns or my attempts at puns, because I feel like we got a good amount of them this episode too, between Leg Tisha, Speech Pay, and the Jocker. So I think that the Batman comparison is very good because he now has, you know, he has like a Robin, I guess, in the form of Nathan.
Oh, it works so well.
And he does have, and he has gadgets that he uses all the time, and that he has the Bat Idol that he's going to use at any point in time. And he has the Bat Flint too. Mm. I know that John also compared him to Lex Luthor. You could also say maybe he's like a General Zod, where he's like building an army out of the negative zone that he was banished from. But I honestly feel like the Batman versus Superman comparison, especially in lieu of DC cinematic universe events, just makes so much sense.
Yeah, I love that. I'm trying to think of what some other people can be. I feel like I'm doing all DC. I feel like Meryl.
Cipe is Alfred.
She deserves more than Alfred. Cipe is her own superhero. Cipe is just Cipe the superhero. I feel like, is Meryl like Poison Ivy? I feel like the fact that she like found the idol in the woods and stuff. I don't know. I feel like she's, and as well being with Dante, who I guess is Aquaman, who's a hero, but he's the villain. Whatever. It works somehow.
I mean, listen, the Justice League movie was about like, oh, these heroes working against each other, but working together. So
I
like,
didn't see it.
There's definitely room there. I mean, I guess, I don't know. Jacques could be the Jacques, or he could also be the Flash, because he moves very quickly when he's looking for idols. And I feel like the Flash does that as well. So there's a lot of opportunity to cast superheroes, and we'll have a lot more game to do that as well. Unless Rob wants to do it for us like he did this episode.
Yeah, well, there's so many comparisons for the superheroes, but all I know is that I am Aquaman and you're Superman, or whatever I said at the start of the podcast, that's legit.
Yes, exactly. I think our superhero are puns, and we take a talking car to Steers as our headquarters. I think that's our sort of storyline there.
Well, on that note, Mike, the hashtag, as we've said, is Jaka. Perfect late contender for the hashtag. It's just Jacques' name, but instead of an S, it's an R. I mean, that you make it easy, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Although if you want to throw in Leg Tisha or Speech Pay in there as well, because I feel like those two are going to be greater threads, though Jacques is an agent of chaos, one of the biggest agents of chaos, I feel like, in the game. So Jacker might actually be a moniker that does hold in honor of our, unfortunately, in absentia guest this week, PK, who I'm so excited to, you know, talk with him later on in the season. But it was great getting to break down this episode with you, Shannon, just because there were so many decisions that were made from each person's individual perspective to talk through that I feel like there was so much to chew on here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we would have loved to speak to PK. We're going to try really hard to get him on later. And as I've said, we have so many great guests coming on to talk about it. I'm so excited. Next week, actually, we start with a great guest. Palesa will be joining us to talk about all of the idols in the game. She knows a lot about that, and obviously so much about Survivor South Africa. So she's going to be someone I really enjoy talking to.
I am so excited for Palesa because of what she was able to both accomplish and have be done against her. You know, she can talk a lot about like when, you know, how do you try to reach across the aisle to someone you're not necessarily agreeing with, which could be something that Dante and Meryl might try to do at this point. She might talk about, you know, having someone jump ship with alliances when the going gets tough, which I think we'll see on both sides of the tribe. So she's going to have a lot of things to say, not only about the season. She's also been doing YouTube recaps the entire season as well on her YouTube channel. So she's already built out her thoughts over the course of this season, though. I'm really excited to see how Queen Palesa is going to, to compare the way these players are making do with the season, especially in a post-Rocco Boot world. What is that going to look like? Is that going to really make a seismic shift of the gameplay as Cipe wants it to be?
Yeah, and Mike, what else do you have going on? I know that Amazing Race wrapped up this week. Such a fun season. Really enjoyed following it and following your recap. So what else is going on in the world of Mike Bloom?
Yeah, so as you just mentioned, we crossed the finish line on Amazing Race. I love the finish, and I really like the season overall. I did Exit Press for Parade Magazine with the final four teams, which was really fun, and wrapped up my coverage with Rob Cesternino and Jessica Leist. So there might still be some stuff in the pipeline, some deep dives, if you will, but I just started up my coverage of Stranger Things, which is coming to Netflix on July 4th. Myself and the great Josh Wigler got together to we recorded a preview podcast. Unfortunately, due to the upside down and the format of Stranger Things, we're recording a lot of these podcasts sort of on our own, and we'll be releasing those periodically. So if that's something you're into, if you want to whet your appetite, get yourself back into the Stranger Things atmosphere before it premieres next week, be sure to check that out, because we're going to keep pumping out content every couple days or so, much like Stefan Johnson pumped up shady tweets towards all the players on Survivor South Africa this week. Stefan Lombard, I should say. Let's not mix up his name here.
Well, Mike, I actually love that. I speak to Mike and I'm like, he's saying how it's actually a really chill time for him in terms of the podcast at the moment because, you know, no US Survivor, no Amazing Race now that that's finished up. He's like, I just have, you know, some Big Brother stuff and Survivor South Africa. And then I see Stranger Things come out and you're dropping a podcast like every 2 days.
I will admit we're not recording those live. You know, I'll reveal a little bit about how the Steers patties get made, but it's something nice and fun to sort of release in the interim, and some nice like scripted content to build into the reality TV that I'm so fondly following over the summer.
Yeah, you are a podcasting superhero with the talking car. That's what you are. But I'm just doing this podcast right now. That's my life until Australian Survivor starts. And there's been some ads for that. It's coming out probably in the next few weeks. We don't actually have that much information on when that is. So that'll be fun to get into. But at the moment, you can follow me at Shannon Gates as always. Follow Mike at A Mike Bloom Type. Subscribe to the Reality TV Wrap-Ups feed and International Survivor Wrap-Ups feed so that you never miss a podcast. And, you know, feel free to reach out. We love talking about the season and the show with everyone. So, I'm pretty available and around on Twitter and Instagram, Reddit, the website. Like, if you reach out, I will respond. I assure you, I'm always on my phone. So, talking about this show with everyone.
And you've also given we talked about some of the people's opinions about like the move that was made and the editing as well. You know, the season has really started to build up as we talked about last week. And so I'm always excited to talk with other Survivor fans about their thoughts on the season so far and some of the storytelling techniques and the strategy as well. So it's a fantastic community, the International Survivor community. And I'm ready to keep that fire building.
Yeah, so true. Well, this was super fun, and we will get PK on at another time. But Mike, thank you so much. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thanks to you guys all for listening, and we will see you with Palessa next week. Bye!